Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're getting into the world of investments, and we're specifically talking about the paradox of choice, and we're just going to, you know, talk about how that may be a hindrance to people perhaps moving forward with the investment decisions. And to make sense of things, we are joined by the team from F&B ETFs, specifically Daniel Dos Passos, who is a senior portfolio manager for F&B ETFs. And we're just going to get a sense of what's going on in the space. Daniel, greetings to you today.
Hi, Mudiwa. Thanks for having me.
So, in economics, because that's the world that I come from, we often talk about the paradox of choice in the sense that where there's too much choice, it often stifles, hinders, or confuses straightforward decision-making. I think to relate it to a lot of people, imagine going onto Netflix, you are faced with so many different options about what to watch, and you actually spend more time trying to decide what to watch than, you know, actually watching something. I take it that there's a similar phenomenon taking place in the world of investments.
That's exactly it. So when I wrote the article around the paradox of choice and how you should make your investment decision, it does come down to situation of where do you start, where do you invest? You are overwhelmed with choice, pretty much like you mentioned on the Netflix scenario. You know, you've got a number of various movies to watch. What do you actually feel like watching in that particular night? So same thing with an investment. What kind of risk do you want? Do you want something that's actively managed? Do you want something that's passively managed? Do you want something in a unit trust format? Do you want something in an ETF format? Do you want something to, you know, with regards to just a traditional cash savings investment? It can all start getting very overwhelming. And I guess, you know, it's a situation of trying to decide what is the right kind of investment for you and trying to understand what you actually want from your investments, whereas also still realizing that as part of making their investments choice, not to be overwhelmed and in the end not actually making a choice, spending too much time trying to analyze, and then opportunities might have been missed, or you, in the worst case scenario, you even land up not investing, which was essentially your original intention, was to start putting some money away and to save.
Out of interest, who on the spectrum is suffering, you know, from this paradox, because there are many different players, you know, out there. Are you talking about, you know, confusion amongst perhaps retail investors that are maybe overwhelmed by, you know, everything that's happening in the universe of investing? Or do you also find confusion amongst investment professionals themselves, you know, about which way to go?
So the confusion can go across the spectrum, and it goes across the spectrum in different ways, I think is a fair point to make. Typically speaking, the retail investor who is slightly less informed as to what is actually taking place within the investment space, and when they are unfamiliar, they then have hesitancy to making a decision. What you would typically find is that more experienced investors who have a bit more experience in what they're doing for, they understand the nuances, they have a specific idea that they're looking for, or a specific theme or factor or asset allocation that they've got in mind, and therefore they can start playing in those themes as they've built up the experience. So the inexperienced investor does find it a little bit more overwhelming and uncertain where to start, while as the experienced investor typically has a bit more of a decision as to where they want to invest. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that we can't all fall prey to, you know, the paradox of choice or the over choice and essentially not make an investment decision on the back end. It is, however, you know, still an important point to note that when you start talking about experienced investors, you know, they might also be a bit more comfortable with the decisions that they make and the outcome of those decisions, which I think is an also important thing to understand. They might be familiar with the markets, they understand the risk. And then when you're talking about inexperienced or your more retail investors, when they don't have significant experience in navigating the markets and the volatility associated with the markets, they can also then sometimes be disappointed in the investment choice that they've made. And I think that is psychologically, it's quite an important thing to take into consideration, that not everyone gets it right all the time. The best of us still get it wrong. So as a retail investor, getting over the hurdle and starting to invest, I think, is important, but it still comes down to the fact of the matter that not every investment decision will go your way, or not everything is perfect. And you need to realize that trying to find the best solution or the best outcome is also not necessarily something that you can always realistically achieve within the investment space.
One of the things I'm quite curious to get your sense on, Daniel, is if we zoom in a little bit on the different types of investing that are happening. We often talk about, you know, active versus passive investing. But, you know, when you actually look at things, there's an element of action in one way or another. So, you know, it's all active in some regard. When you are, you know, considering yourself a proper active investor, you're literally sitting there making the different decisions. You usually have a strategy, you know, in place and certain positions that you have, maybe even mandates, you know, to say that the portfolio must have, you know, X amount, who knows, maybe in fixed income and then, you know, a portion in, you know, X amount. Do you find that the paradox maybe is affecting discipline as well? You know, that a person will have a plan, you know, to say this is how we are structuring, you know, our portfolio, our investments. But, you know, as you're going through a certain cycle, something exciting starts happening over here and starts creating some noise. And maybe let's call it fear of missing out, FOMO, you know, it might distract you and you might decide, you know, maybe there's an allocation we can put, you know, towards, you know, some of that, because, you know, in the short term, you know, all of that volatility, you know, riding out some of those waves where things look exciting, where things are, yeah, it's just keen to get your sense on that front.
Yes. So obviously the whole investment spectrum, you know, across the various asset classes, fixed income, equities, local offshore exposures, you know, cash is also a form of investment. It can get, there's a lot of different allocations that you want to put into place, and there can be a lot of themes. There can be sub-themes within those themes, as you mentioned. So if we just use equities, for example, and you have emerging market equities, South Africa within itself is an emerging market, but you might want exposure to emerging markets. You might want exposure to South Africa, China, India. There can be a number of themes which plays out in that. You might want exposure to specific companies as well. So that also then starts putting you into a situation of where do you get active? There might be something which has actually excited you and gets you to deviate from your norm. There is nothing conceptually against that. That is what a lot of that active managers do. From a passive manager point of view, there's typically a rules-based index which you would look to track or follow associated with that. I think it is just worth clarifying that even the passive indices are a lot more active than what people realize. The term passive, you know, implies that nothing gets done. There is actually quite a lot of rebalancing which happens within these indices. So there is a fair amount of trading which happens. It's just more a rule-based type scenario. And then in terms of trying to navigate various environments and themes and factors, and I've touched on it as well, is that the more experienced of an investor you are, you might have certain themes which you pick up or things which you're interested in. You might be concerned about local interest rates, foreign interest rates, local inflation. Do you want to protect yourself on a global perspective and have a rand hedge in play as well? Do you think it's a good time to take money offshore, to bring it back from offshore and bring it back onshore? All these decisions is quite a difficult thing to set in motion and to actually understand. And with all these choices available, again, if you expand it just away from locally to offshore, the number of choices that you have to make just carries on compounding in terms of the various jurisdictions, etc. So the paradox definitely exists and gets worse the more you actually start trying to expand it beyond your current situation, which is why the more experienced investors are a bit more familiar with it. It doesn't say that inexperienced investors still can't play these themes, though, and actually still get a sense of what they're wanting to do and generate the returns from it. So just to use a classic example, if you want to invest in equities, either locally or offshore, a retail investor might not necessarily know which shares they want to invest into and which economy, if they want to be in South Africa or offshore, they can make that decision. without having to be specifically America or specifically Europe or specifically China. They can simply just buy a broad-based MSCI World type product or the S&P Global 1200 type product. If you do want specific allocation to a specific market, there's also often products which allow that. So even within that, before drilling down through all of that, the retail investors can still have a general yardstick or general measure that they're looking to play or theme. And they can still also, you know, get the experience, I guess, by starting with the general themes. And as you build up your experience, you can then start becoming more specific as well.
You know, when I guess the world of ETF specifically has grown over the last couple of decades, if we were to locate this conversation, you know, at that advent, you know, all of those years ago, and you're talking about, you know, certain investors such as the Bogles of this world, you know, that are credited with having, you know, popularized, you know, some of these things. One would have thought back then that you're actually helping to reduce, you know, some of this paradox that you and I are talking about. But now they seem to be passive products all across the board. You can, in certain instances, there are now so many passive products that a person can, you know, get into and across, you know, various themes. Now I'm asking myself if there's now a paradox into, if we're just to look just at ETFs, just ETFs without anything else, it almost seems as if, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that now there's even, you know, this paradox falls into which ETF should I get into? Once upon a time in South Africa, you could just get into a top 40 and, you know, you could keep it moving, maybe a gold ETF or something, keep it moving. But now, you know, there's everything, you know, that a person can get into.
Yeah, so that's definitely the case. I mean, from our side, we've got 8 ETFs out there. So even within that, there's already 8 different products to choose from. In addition to that, we also manage other portfolios with other exposures. I think when it comes to the JSE, if I'm not mistaken, recently, the number of exchange-traded products, so that would be ETFs, ETNs, and then a few other specialist types of securities listed on the JSE, now exceeds the number of companies listed on the JSE. So the paradox, and yes, admittedly, some of these products are giving you similar returns, but now you can see where the issue starts coming up, and that you start having a number of products out there and trying to make a decision, and you've got more products which are bulk solutions, referencing a basket or an index, then the actual number of constituents that might be there within the market itself in terms of your various options to make an investment. Internationally, yes, there is a lot of companies listed internationally, but you're seeing a same and similar theme play out in that we started off with your traditional passive indices and products which would track a headline index like a top 40 index. Then over time, you know, we came up with a SWIX index, which has now been harmonized with the top 40. But there was, you know, those two separate indices. You get a capped index. There's also other index providers out there referencing South African local equities. There's a mid-cap index. So again, you know, local equities, but you start expanding on these things. And internationally, it's the exact same story. And then what has also happened is that aside from just these traditional headline indices, and possibly something with a simple factor like a capping factor, they've now started adding concepts like ESG into it, so environmental, social, and governance factors. It can be value factors, growth factors associated with the momentum factors, very sector specific. And sometimes, you know, it comes down to things such as like a water exposure or something which is referencing AI, which is quite topical at the moment, fourth industrial revolution exposure. So again, you start off with something and you have a basic idea with the traditional market. And then as you start expanding it and looking at what the various options are out there, you can then very easily become overwhelmed and saying, well, what is it that I'm looking at? Fourth industrial revolution. Okay, that sounds fantastic, but you might not even know what it means. And then you might then have to start exploring it. And then you land up finding yourself 2 weeks or 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, maybe a month, you know, a few months down the line, and you haven't actually made an investment decision because now you've been doing all this research. And then you still land up coming back to the point of, well, I wanted to invest, but I haven't made an investment. and I can't make a decision. And sometimes we just need to try find a way to simplify our decision processes in terms of what are our general aspects so that we can start understanding it. And then once you become more and more experienced, you can always look to evolve your thought processes and possibly start adding to your traditional core of a portfolio and then start adding some kind of satellite exposures, whether you want to do that on an active basis or a passive basis with a standard allocation or trying to play the themes from one quarter, 1 year to the next, etc.
So with that in mind, some of the different strategies that you're talking about, what's the advice now, to investors to perhaps, because at the end of the day, if we cut through what we're talking about, we're in essence trying to have a conversation about how investors could be cutting through the noise, when it comes to actually making the investment, the investment decisions, whether we're going to call it passive or active. It's just about cutting through the noise so that, people can, decide and actually do something. So what's the advice from a practical point of view?
Yeah, so obviously advice is a tricky thing to formally comment on. From my side, but generally speaking, the concepts, and just to go with something which Warren Buffett has mentioned before, try invest in something which you can understand, or invest in something which makes sense to you. So one of the examples is way back when is Warren Buffett didn't want to invest in during the dot-com bubble in some of those tech stocks, because in his mind, he didn't understand the businesses. It wasn't to say that they were bad businesses. It wasn't to say that there was money to be made or money not to be made or that it was too risky. It was just a simple fact of the matter that in his mind, he didn't understand the businesses well enough to make an investment. And coincidentally, he's had like an investment in Coca-Cola, which people have known over all these years. And that is something which he obviously made sense of. So I think the general point is to try to keep things in your realm of safety and where things make sense from your personal perspective. Whether it is, a simple cash investment, whether it's investing in fixed income or some kind of bond strategy, whether it's investing in equities, trying to do your research and understand what it is that you want to invest into and understand the basics, but not get overwhelmed in all of the technical detail out there associated with things and try to learn it all, study it all, do the research to what makes sense in your mind, and then looking to start, taking action in terms of actually investing going forward, and then start, reaping the rewards of returns over the longer term.
Obviously, like you said, this is not really a discussion about investment advice. That's something that, people should actually be talking to their investment advisors and that type of thing, about. But what are some of the questions then? Maybe we could ask that, like if someone is engaging and they just want to have, to feel like, okay, fine, I'm actually engaging and, this person that I'm engaging with is actually, one, knows what they're doing, and two, they themselves are not being affected by some of this stuff. What's a good approach there?
Yes, so that's a very, very good question. So I think to put it in context, we all got different financial situations, different expectations. I think when speaking to a financial advisor, it's important to articulate not only your current financial situation, but also your current needs, what your risk appetite is, what kind of level of risk and are you comfortable with or are you uncomfortable with. Age is one of the common things which lands up playing a factor. So the younger you are, typically they say you can take more risk within your investment portfolio because you have a longer lifetime to recover any losses. If you're someone who's nearing retirement, that also plays a factor in terms of wanting to reduce your risk. That again comes down to personal circumstances. What kind of money are you looking to retire with or what net wealth do you want to have when you retire? How much do you need to protect that? Are you needing to try aggressively grow that? Which would then come down to something which your financial advisor would probably talk you through and make you realize the various options. Hopefully a good advisor will also help protect you from making rash decisions as well. And I think that's where the transparency is an important thing, is you need to say to your advisor, this is my wealth, this is my net financial position, this is my disposable income that I can invest. is there anything that I can invest in excess? And are you willing to take some concessions in terms of lifestyle and livelihood in the short term for the longer term benefits? All the kind of things which you need to have a proper in-depth conversation with your financial advisor on. And they should then also help advise you with regards to what products make sense, how you should invest, where you should invest, what to take into consideration, how to blend your overall portfolio and your overall personal budget or personal balance sheet with regards to your short, medium, and long-term goals.
All right. One of the other things that I'm now thinking about is because so many people have these financial managers, investment advisors, etc., they tend to be, as we've been talking about, so many different products that people can invest in. From where you're sitting in the industry, you're a professional, you've been in the game for a while. For myself, maybe I'll have, whether that's a mutual fund, a unit trust, whatever it is, I've had this conversation, with my investment advisor. They say, okay, fine, this might be something, to sign you up for. Okay, cool. Let's get into there. Where we're sitting now, how big a place if we just zoom in on ETFs specifically, how big a place do ETFs have in portfolios right now? Obviously, no two portfolios are going to be the same, but on a trend level, how prominent are ETFs, for the various portfolios that, are floating around out there?
Yes, so it can change, as you mentioned, depending on the various portfolios. ETFs have definitely gained significant prominence, both internationally and locally as well, in terms of being used within various portfolios. Obviously, you're going to have different portfolio managers with different styles, different opinions, different factors which they look to play, or different themes and how they look to construct their portfolio. But ETFs are a significant portion. I do know that internally within the broader First Rand group and the various asset managers which we have within the business, such as Ashburton and FNB, ETFs are used extensively across the product set because they do give you the cheap access to certain benchmark indices, with regards to your portfolios. And it gives you the exposure that you need without necessarily, again, overcomplicating what you're looking to try and do. So from a paradox of choice point of view, and, the various portfolio managers in the market also have, to battle this kind of consideration on their side. And they try to think, well, do we want to have to worry about, I'll use the top 40 index as an example, worrying about trying to track 40 shares in the index? Then they have to go and do the research to understand how the index works to track it. Then they might get tempted to go and start deviating away from that index in terms of going overweight a certain share relative to the index itself. And yes, that is an active decision and they are fully within their rights to do it and value can be achieved that way. But sometimes they also go and they look at it and they say, well, instead of trying to focus on all the nuances within this index, we'll buy a cost-efficient instrument such as an ETF, which will give us the exposure to that index. And then it really allows them to put all their time and effort to research specific shares or specific themes, or to just even just more generally, if you just want to manage a multi-asset portfolio with allocations to equities, fixed income, local, offshore, potentially commodities, et cetera, you then now know you can make your macroeconomic decisions with regards to, do you think the US market is going to rally or do you think it is going to contract? And then you can just simply buy an ETF, which gives you that exposure, or sell an ETF, which relative to what exposure you might already have, to try and control your overall asset allocation and make a macro decision as opposed to trying to make a micro decision of saying, well, the S&P is going to sell off because one of the top seven shares within the index is, has overrun. And we think there's a contraction coming, and that is a significant overweight within the US index that can feed through into, or in the US economy that can feed through into the index as well. But sometimes instead of trying to do that micro call, it might just be easier to play the general theme on a macro level with regards to specific ETFs. To clarify, even the ETFs, and we've already mentioned this, can get very specific. You do get ETFs which will have pretty small concentrated basket around certain specific themes within that. And what the active managers coincidentally start doing is they start saying, well, we like the idea of South African banks, for example, but they're not sure which bank they want to, which they prefer over the others. So they're happy to say, well, we'll buy something which references all the local banks or the local financial industry, because it gives them that exposure, but still gives them a partial de-risk and diversification to say, well, they don't have to be very specific with regards to choosing that.
All right. Before we let you go, two things on my side. Once again, in the world of trends in the ETF market, do you see South Africa, because South Africa has tended to have a low risk appetite when it comes to certain things that are seen as being more exotic. Do you see South African, let's say your index providers providing instruments that will follow some of the popular themes that we're seeing right now? AI is obviously a big theme that, you know, some people are following, and people are creating what you call this, indexes and products around that. Other people have now started creating ETFs around crypto and that type of thing. Is South Africa a market that will see creating its own products around something like that, or will South African investors sort of have to have that offshore exposure to someone else's, products to have that, as part of their portfolios?
Yeah. So within South Africa, we are actually a pretty developed financial market and financial services industry relative to, other emerging markets across the world. And in some certain aspects, we actually, better than some of the developed markets when it comes to our financial institutions. So the thought behind it in terms of creating additional products is definitely there. I mean, we do have, well-educated, disciplined professionals with the thought process to come up with those products. However, we do have a relatively small local industry in terms of universe of shares to create certain themes or narratives or indices in terms of the companies listed within South Africa. So although the idea of creating new products and exploring these various themes does exist, the local universe is not necessarily conducive to creating some of these products, which is why you will have noticed with a lot of the products that is listed on the JSE in terms of exchange traded products such as ETFs and ETNs, they are referencing other offshore companies or other offshore indices. And the reason for that is that we do feel there's a need or demand for some of these exposures. However, we know the local asset base in terms of listed companies is not sufficient. So we need to start looking externally to be able to account for that and to grant, the various investors those exposures. So I think there will be a limited take up in terms of, products referencing direct local companies. I think within that aspect, you'll more likely find that the companies themselves will be the better allocated investment to those themes with regards to local exposures. But from an offshore point of view, definitely all these things exist. We get a number of requests from clients looking for various types of indices with regards to offshore exposures as well. So I think it's definitely a situation of the product set is going to expand and is going to continue to expand. And where there is demand and appetite, I think the local financial institutions will definitely try to provide that exposure to its investors. What does end up coming into play, though, is, as we've mentioned, with regards to a paradox of choice, once you start becoming more specific, certain investors might not be interested in these very specific allocations as well, whereas the more traditional types of exposures is where people typically look to invest because that's what they're familiar with, that's what they understand, that's where the bulk of the assets is flowing towards. So with regards to that, there's definitely not going to be a replacement of what we currently have with new exciting indices that is going to completely overwhelm the traditional investment sets and traditional indices, traditional exposures. But as the local economy grows, those specific themes will start permeating through the retail base into the institutional space, where we then will start looking at the business case scenario of listing such the products, gaining these exposures to our investors to try help them fulfill their financial needs. But again, something that is very specific will have a limited AUM market share or base which can allocate assets to that. So again, it's not necessarily something which will be listed directly on the local exchange. You might try to find some other kind of derivative or alternative way of gaining assets to such exposures, which could incidentally be something like investing in a unit trust, which gives exposure to global small cap companies, for example. You know, if you really want to start getting specific, you can start looking. You will find the opportunities out there. But it's, again, just, you know, do your research and understand what it is that you allocate your assets to make sure that it makes sense to you.
All right. And because we are talking about decision-making, I think we can end off talking about something that you've probably gotten a lot of questions about, you know, over the last, you know, year, let's call it year, 2 years. How have you seen AI, you know, affecting decision-making for investors, whether on the retail side or, you know, the professional fund managers?
AI is always one of those interesting topics that people like to talk to. And I think when it comes to AI, it's been around a lot longer than what people think or realize. It's just materialized itself in different aspects. So just basic concepts of sorting or, you know, backfilling data and how having to backfill certain scenarios, that kind of stuff has been done before. And the computers have come up with logic and optimization type models to do that. What a lot of people start talking to now is obviously this concept of these large language models, such as like a ChatGPT, which takes into consideration a whole bunch of text, which then gets put together by the AI to then determine what the natural human thought process or algorithm is based on the questions that have been received and then the subsequent responses. It is something which will gradually permeate through the market. I think a lot of the asset managers are already using this. It comes down to if you're wanting to actively manage a portfolio or passively manage a portfolio, it can give you a slight difference. So on the passive side, we are rules-based, to be fair, regardless of what AI says we should be investing in or not investing in within a specific index, we've got rules to follow. So that constrains us. From an active management point of view, it is definitely something that, you know, the market is continuously looking into and trying to find a way to see how they can potentially use that going forward. I think it's a situation of, although AI is new and it's not new and it's currently very exciting in terms of what it can do, we also need to be a little bit constrained in terms of deploying something such as AI outright without doing so-called sanity checks or sense checks within the investment space, so as not to overexpose investors to what a machine is potentially telling them without, you know, applying some kind of oversight from a professional point of view. AI is extremely powerful and it can give you a lot of information at your fingertips and very efficiently. However, it's not prone to making its own mistakes as well. So I do think it's an important caveat that although it is very useful, it's not foolproof. And within that, in the investment professional side of things, from a portfolio management point of view, it's definitely a tool which is currently being used and will continue to be used more and more going forward. But it is still one of those situations where the investment professionals, you know, will have a slight nuance, some embedded experience, which is not necessarily something which is blanket out there within the AI space. And I do think, although AI is going to help, the relevance of having good portfolio managers, good financial advisors, et cetera, is still going to put you in good stead going forward.
All right. That's how we land today's conversation. It has been a good one, just talking about the paradox of choice when it comes to making investment decisions. You know, Daniel just giving us a sense of what's going on in the market to say that there are a lot more investment options that are out there, a lot more products, you know, that people can invest in, a lot more things that people can actually even dream up, you know, to say, you know, why not, you know, explore this particular area, this particular theme. And, you know, all of that just leading itself to some confusion when it comes to making investment decisions. In certain cases, making it a little bit slower. In certain cases, maybe even tempting people to deviate a little bit from, you know, some of the parts that they would have set for themselves when it comes to how they're going to structure their investments and their portfolios. But he is just giving us a sense of, you know, what's going on in the market. He says this is something that can affect people on both the retail, you know, as side of things, and your professional investors. But your professional investors, because they have a lot more experience and know the market, tend to be tend to be much better at cutting through the noise and also just understanding what's actually going on the ground. Also getting a sense of what's happening in terms of other aspects, you know, of decision making. We spoke quite a bit about the world of, you know, active versus passive investments. Also talking quite a bit about the place of things like your exchange traded products, and how much more prominent those tend to be right now in people's portfolios. And also at the same time, ending off talking about AI and the place of AI in terms of decision making in investments. Daniel giving us a sense to say, actually, you know, some of these tools have been around for quite a bit, but it's just that right now with the LLM or large language models, that is something that is currently permeating and is likely to take hold a bit more going forward. So that's been it. We were in conversation with Daniel Dos Passos. He is a senior portfolio manager over at FNB ETFs. Daniel, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great. Thanks, Fadima.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So, for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.